we start with a short meditation.
Sanji Jidan Soji Jonanda Sanju Badu Dani Jabsunji Dagi Jin Soji Besunam Ji Dola Benji Sanji Ruparaju Sanji Jidan Soji Jonanda Sanju Badu Dani Jabsunji Dagi jinso jibe se namji Drola benji sanje dhubayu Sanje judan dojin junamla Sanju badu dani jabsuji Dagi jinso jibe se namji Drola benji sanje
To bring the the transforming the adversities, this third point had three kind of sections. One was through the relative bodhicitta, and then another through ultimate bodhicitta. That's the through understandings and things like that. And then there is the third one, which is the special practices, the actual, you know, like actions that you do, and through that bring the adversaries into the in the path. How to do that? There it says four applications as the best of methods. It recommends four things here in this particular text. These are the accumulation of merit, the purification of the faults or negative deeds, showing generosity towards harmful influences, and making offerings to the protectors. And now this, the first accumulation of merit. Accumulation of merit in Buddhism. You know, merit here, merit is a word which is sometimes, I don't know, in people sometimes say merit is not a good word because it reminds them of the medals they get in the kindergarten schools. I don't know, but what it means is positive deeds, to accumulate positive deeds. Accumulate of positive deeds means, you know, to try to do something that's positive. And also, you know, trying to reduce doing something that's negative. Now, positive and negative deed in Buddhism means, you know, the negative deeds is something that you do with your body, speech, and mind. That's been inspired or motivated by you know, kind of disturbed emotion, negative emotion, like anger, you know, jealousy or pride or, greed or things like that. Any actions you do with that kind of motivation is regarded as negative. Any actions you do with your body, speech, and mind that's been inspired by, you know, like compassion, something that is, you know, really trying to, with a good intention, with a intention to help beings, to benefit beings, and benefit, more people, to reduce pain and problem and suffering, that kind of intention, if that motivation is the primary, thing that makes this action, then that is called positive. Now, generally speaking, from Buddhist point of view, negative actions is something that result into unpleasant result, an unpleasant situation, unpleasant. It brings something that is unpleasant for you and for others. A positive action is something that brings out something pleasant for you and others. These are the definition of a positive and negative actions. So therefore, now the more we can, we can accumulate, means we can do with our body, speech, and mind the positive deeds. The more we do that, the more we concentrate on that, the more negative part is reduced. And so therefore, it's a way of transforming ourselves and transforming others too, in transforming the whole situation. So therefore, this becomes very important. It's not sometimes, this is very important, because sometimes people think that Buddhism, just to meditate, close your door and meditate, and then that's the practice. It's not necessarily that's the only one. It is the action of body, speech, and mind. In Buddhism, this is very important to understand. Beliefs doesn't count. Your actions count. But action does not just mean your body action. Action, body, speech, and mind, and especially the mind. If I believe everything that the Buddha says, and I say, I believe everything the Buddha says, I believe Buddha is the greatest teacher, I believe in everything, and then you do negative deeds, then you are no better. From Buddhist point of view, if your actions, body, speech, and mind is not positive, then whatever you believe doesn't make a difference. If you say, I don't believe in Buddha, I don't believe in Dharma, I don't believe in Sangha, but I do positive deeds with my body, speech, and mind, then that's okay. That's the Buddhist way of understanding. So therefore, the beliefs don't count. Your actions count. So what you are, whether you are a good person or a bad person, whether you have accumulated positive deeds or negative deeds, doesn't depend on what you believe. It depends on what you do. So therefore, and what you do means do something that is, that is motivated with good intention, with compassion. Compassion is so important because of this, that if anything is done with really compassion, then that cannot be a negative deed. That has to become a positive deed because it's done with your good intention, and then therefore you have tried your best to do it in a positive way, as beneficial as possible. Of course, it doesn't mean that whatever you do, even with good intention, not necessarily, happens exactly as you wish. You know, I want to do something with really good intention to help somebody, but how much help that will actually happen depends not on my way of doing alone. It has many different things. You know, everything has many different elements. You know, anything has to happen because of many causes and conditions. So therefore, if all the causes and conditions come together, then that would happen. Otherwise, it would not happen. So therefore, I am not the only cause and condition. So therefore, it's not guaranteed. But if I do with my good intention, with as best as I could, with my body, speech and mind, that is good enough. That's accumulation of merit. You know? The more I am concentrated on that, doing something positive with my body, speech and mind, the more I am creating a positive atmosphere for myself and others. So therefore, that is the best way to ward off negative things happening also. This is very important from Buddhist point of view, that to make something good in the future, it's your, you know, your positivity. It doesn't matter that, you know, I'm too intelligent and I'm not thinking too far behind, you know, what is happening. If I do something really positive all the time, with my body, speech and mind, this says that will itself create a situation for myself that there will be positive things in my life. So therefore, you know, this is one of the main things, to create a positive situation for myself, because this is also important, because the more I am, you know, I'm thinking and I'm acting, I am positively with, you know, with regard to helping others, we wanting, you know, like we talked about this yesterday also, about, you know, how to, you know, attitude that we have. So if I, you know, and this is also important in many ways, because, you know, when, you know, people talk about, you know, confidence, self-confidence, you know, how much self-confidence I am, how much like, how much, you know, this, what you say, like, job satisfaction I have, you know. When people talk about job satisfaction, what does that mean? First you can translate.
Puhuimme vastoinkäymisten muuttamisesta. Kävimme läpi kolme kohtaa, joista ensimmäisessä pohdittiin vastoinkäymisten muuttamista suhteellisen bodhicittan kautta, toisessa rajattoman bodhicittan kautta. Kolmanneksi tulemme erityisiin harjoituksiin, jotka ovat konkreettisia tekoja, joita teemme tuodaksemme vastoinkäymiset osaksi polkua. Tekstissä sanotaan, 4 sovellutusta ovat menetelmistä parhaat. Nämä 4 sovellutusta ovat ensimmäiseksi ansion kerääminen, toiseksi kielteisyyksien puhdistaminen.
Excuse me, Rinpoche, what was the third?
There is this special practices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is the special practices has then 4
merits,
yeah, 4 methods.
Purification. Yeah. What was the third one?
Purification of faults. Third one, showing generosity towards harmful influences.
Thank you. Anteliaisuus. Eli osoittaa anteliaisuutta vahingollisia vaikutuksia vastaan. Ja neljänneksi lahjojen antaminen suojelijoille. Ensimmäiseksi ansion kertymä.
Joskus ihmiset sanovat, että ansio ei ole kovin hyvä sana, koska se tuo heille mieleen lastentarhan, jolloin annettiin papukaijamerkkejä kaikennäköistä suorituksista. Oli miten hyvänsä myönteisten tekojen kerääminen. Sen tarkoitus on vähentää kielteisyyden vaikutusta meidän elämässämme. Mitä kielteiset ja myönteiset teot sitten ovat buddhalaisuudessa? Kielteiset teot ovat kaikki sellaiset teot, jotka on tehty puheen, kehon tai mielen kautta, joita motivoi häiriintyneet kielteiset tunteet, viha, kateus, ahneus, ylpeys. Mikä tahansa teko, joka tehdään tällaisella motivaatiolla, on kielteinen teko. Sitä vastoin taas mikä tahansa teko, joka tehdään kehon, puheen tai mielen kautta hyvällä aikomuksella, jonka tarkoituksena on hyödyttää muita olentoja, vähentää tuskaa ja kärsimystä. Näitä tekoja kutsutaan myönteisiksi. Yleisesti puhuen kielteiset teot ovat jotain sellaista, joista seuraa epämiellyttäviä kielteisiä tuloksia, ja myönteiset teot saavat aikaan hyviä myönteisiä tuloksia. Mitä enemmän me teemme myönteisiä tekoja, sitä enemmän vähenee kielteinen vaikutus meidän elämässämme. Myönteiset teot ovat siis keino muuttaa itseämme. Jotkut ihmiset ajattelevat, että buddhalaisuudessa on kyse vain siitä, että pistetään ovi kiinni ja istutaan meditaatiotyynyllä. Mutta itse asiassa harjoitus ei lopu siihen, koska olennaista eivät ole uskomukset, se mihin uskoo, vaan se, millä on lopulta merkitystä, ovat teot. Teot on ymmärrettävä siten, että ei pelkästään ne, mitä teemme oman kehomme kautta, vaan myöskin puheen ja mielen kautta tehtävät teot ovat teoja, jotka voivat olla joko kielteisiä tai myönteisiä. Vaikka uskoisin kaiken, mitä Buddha sanoo, ja siitä huolimatta teen kielteisiä tekoja, tällä uskolla ei ole mitään merkitystä, koska tekoni ovat huonoja. Sen sijaan, vaikka en uskoisi mitään, mitä buddhalaisuus opettaa, mutta teen silti myönteisiä tekoja, joita motivoi myötätunto, sillä on vaikutusta. Kaikki tahansa, mikä on myötätunnon motivoimaa, on hyvä teko. Se ei silti tarkoita sitä, että saavuttaisit aina kaiken sen, mihin pyrit tuolla hyvällä teolla, koska se, miten asiat tapahtuvat, siihen vaikuttavat monet yhtäaikaiset syyt ja olosuhteet. Niinpä minä yksin en hallitse sitä prosessia, millä minun teoistani seuraa tiettyjä vaikutuksia. Mutta silti teko, joka on tehty myötätunnon motivoimana, on hyvä teko ja siitä kertyy ansioita. Voimme myös vaikuttaa omaan tulevaisuutemme siten, että meidän omassa elämässämme myönteiset asiat lisääntyvät sillä, että teemme nyt hyviä tekoja. Ne vähentävät kielteisyyden vaikutusta ja tuottavat myönteisiä tuloksia tulevaisuudessa. Ja minun elämässäni tulee silloin olemaan enemmän myönteisiä asioita. Mitä enemmän ajattelen ja toimin myönteisesti, pitäen mielessä toisten auttamisen, sitä enemmän kerään ansioita. Tästä puhuimme myös eilen, kun puhuimme asenteesta. Kun ihmiset puhuvat itseluottamuksesta, mitä sillä tarkoitetaan? Ihmiset saattavat miettiä työtyytyväisyyttä, mitä sillä tarkoitetaan?
And I ask a question.
It can be two things. One thing says I like my job, and then another thing that I do my job with all my love from my heart. and by my heart for all people who come to me and with whom I do this.
Okay.
Se voi tarkoittaa kahta asiaa, joko sitä, että pidän työstäni, tai sitten sitä, että teen työni täydestä sydämestä ollakseni muille ihmisille hyödyksi.
And what makes you love your job?
That I do the bad things.
Huh?
The bad things that I know.
Bad things.
Best.
Best things.
Yes,
best things. Meaning? Best for what?
Helpless.
So that's it, you know. I think it's like this, that if you are doing something, and if I feel that this, what I'm doing, is something that is useful, that is beneficial, you know, that is good for others as well as myself, you know, then I feel, you know, this work is worthwhile, you know, then I feel job satisfaction, because I'm doing something that is useful, that is beneficial, that is helping others, you know. If I feel that I'm doing something that doesn't really help anybody, you know, if I think that what I'm doing is not really helping anybody, you know, then I feel, even if I'm getting some pay, you know, or good amount of pay, I feel no job satisfaction, because why I'm doing this, you know, it's kind of useless. So I think it is like that the job satisfaction is coming from, not because, you know, it's just interesting, but it's because, you know, I know that this, what I'm doing, is of some benefit to some people. So therefore, you know, this is accumulation of merit, just that, actually, in a way, you know, that's what we usually like also to do, you know, it's not just that. So therefore, what we try to do is to do something that I know should be of some good thing, some help, some beneficial to other things. And this is the understanding from Buddhist point of view, that the more you do that, the more you do to help other beings, and that would bring some good things, the more yourself will be benefited also. Not only others will be benefited, but yourself will be benefited. Once Buddha was asked by some people, you know, why you are so beautiful? Why you are so graceful? Why so many people, you know, everybody, you know, likes you, and everybody respects you, and everybody follows you? Why is like that? And Buddha said, it's because I did positive deeds only, long time. I tried to help other beings, and I always put other beings before my own, my own, what can you say, interests. And therefore, I've been always good looking, even when I was born as an animal, and always everybody respected me. And then he told a story. Jataka, he told lots of stories in the Jataka stories. He said that I was born a deer, but that was a beautiful deer, you know, the golden color, and then like really beautiful horns, golden horns, and so therefore he became the kind of the leader of a big herd of deers. But then in that country, there was a king who liked to hunt, you know, to hunting. So he used to hunt, and when he used to hunt, he used to not only, you know, himself go and hunt, but he used to bring all his army to hunt. And then he used to ask all the people, the villagers also, to help. So they used to run on their horseback in the fields and, you know, disturb people, and, you know, so everybody got fed up. And then the subject, you know, all the people said, we can't do like this. This is too much. We will do something that will be, you know, not disturb us. And then also king has his pleasure of hunting. We will make a big fence in the forest, and then drive lots of animals in that fence so that they cannot run out. And then king can go and hunt, you know, with no need of too many people. So we will do that. So they did that. You know. They made a big fence, and then they drove lots of animals into this fence. And when doing this, these two big flocks of deers got into this fence. One was that with the golden, golden deer, and another was another flock. So two flocks. Now that was okay, but then king came and his people came and they hunted. And so when it was noticed, so then lots of deers got not only killed but also damaged because they were running here and running there. And so then these two leaders of these two flocks of the deers made a meeting. And then they said, this is very bad. Now we are caught in this fence, so we cannot get out. But when they hunt, lots of animals get damaged unnecessarily because we run here and there. We should not do this. We should do something else. So what we have to do is we have to volunteer one deer each day to be hunted by the king. So that deer would go to where the king is, and so the king will go and shoot that deer, and so he will be satisfied and take that, and so then the rest of the deers will not be disturbed. So they agreed on this, and they agreed that one deer will go from this flock, and next day another deer will go from this flock. So then that was going on, so one deer from this today, and then another today, like this. And then one day, one doe, this female deer, came to this golden deer, and she was crying, and she said, today is my turn to go to the to be hunted. I have no problem to going myself, but I am pregnant. I have a baby about to come out. Now this is injustice because our agreement was for one deer to lose her life, but now I am not one, I am two. So if I go there, then two lives will be lost, and that's not in our agreement. I told to my leader, but he says he can't do anything. So could you please help me? Then this golden deer said, okay, you are right. This is our agreement that one life go and get killed, not two. So you go away. I will do something about it. And then, of course, he couldn't ask anybody else. So he himself went and stood where the deer used to stand. And then when the king came, he saw the golden deer, famous, the leader of the group was there. So he was astonished, and he said, why are you here? You are the king. You should come last. Is everybody finished? And he said, no, it's not finished. But today is my turn. You shoot. He says, no, I can't shoot you. You are so you are so beautiful and you are so gracious. I will not shoot you. I release you. Today, I free you. You are free. You go. I don't need to hunt today. And when he said this, then the deer said, that's no good. If I am not killed today, but tomorrow somebody has to come and you will kill that, and next day another. So that's no use. This today is my turn. You just shoot me. Because there are so many other deers, and everybody has their own life, and everybody loves their life. Nobody wants to die. So, I am saved doesn't mean anything to me. Then the king thinks, and he says, well, okay. In that case, now I free your flock. How many people, how many deers you have? You take your own group. You go away. Yeah, we will make a door open, and then you take all your people out tomorrow. I free you. And then the deer says, That's not enough. If you free my group, then another group who are my friend, you know, then they have to suffer every day. Every day one of them will be killed. So what's the use that my group is free? I cannot do that. I will not go. Then King thinks and says, okay, doesn't matter. I free both your groups. You just go away tomorrow. I free all of you. I don't hunt you anymore. Finished. Then the deer said, but that's not enough. Because there are so many animals in the forests. All of them are innocent. They have done nothing to anybody. You know, and they are in your country, so they are your subjects. You know. But when you don't hunt us, then you hunt them. You know. And that's no good, because it's like same, our friends, same beings. You know. Please free all of them. And the king said, but you are doing too much. You are kind of crossing your limits. You know, you're doing too much. You should not do that. And then, but the king thinks, and then he says, okay, I'll do that for you. You are so good. You are very, you know, good-hearted, and you know, you are so much thinking about others. Okay, I'll do that. I free every animals in the forest. I will make a declaration that nobody can from today hunt any animals. I free you. Then deer said, yes, but then can I make another request? He says, what is this now? Now you're being too much, you know, I will not do anything. No, please, you know, please do this, because, you know, when you don't hunt anybody, you know, all animals, then you will try to hunt the birds, you know. Everybody will, the whole, you know, burden will fall on the birds, because, you know, you don't hunt animals, so you will hunt birds. The birds are the most innocent people, you know, they don't do any harm to anybody, and they just, you know, live on the, you know, on the trees, and they just do only their own things, and, you know, then, you know, they are my friends, and, you know, they are so nice and beautiful, and all these things, and so, why you hunt them? You know, you should please save them all. Then King thinks, and, you know, takes time and things like that. And at the last he says, okay, I grant you that, but this is last, you know, this is last. So now you go away. I don't hunt any birds, and I ask my people not to hunt any birds. Now please go away. The king, the deer says, but please let me ask one more, just one more, last thing. He says, what is that now? It's too much. No, just one more. Then I'll be happy. He says, it's the fishes. You know, the fishes in the rivers and the seas that is there in your country, you know. They are the most innocent one. You know, they never did any harm to anybody. You know. So why people kill them? But then now that you don't hunt the animals and you don't hunt the birds, then you will hunt the fishes, you know. And so please free them, and then I will go happily. And then, you know, King thinks and, you know, takes time, and then I says, okay, now I do that too. You are very, very stubborn, but it's okay. So then he frees all three, you know, all the animals, and then birds, and then fishes, and then, you know, then he does that, and then the deer is very happy, and then he jumps, and he goes, and then he takes his herd, and then goes away, and then he, you know, so it's like that, he says, that, you know, people who are, you know, this kind of deeds, life after life are done, and therefore I became like what I am. So this is, you know, just a story, a Jataka story.
puhuttiin työtyytyväisyydestä. Päätettiin siihen, että jos teet jotain, mikä on hyödyllistä sekä sinulle itsellesi että muille, niin se tuottaa tyytyväisyyttä. Se, että koen, että teen jotakin, mistä on hyötyä. Jos ajattelen, että teen jotain sellaista, mistä ei oikeastaan ole mitään hyötyä kenellekään, en tunne tyytyväisyyttä työstäni, vaikka saisin kuinka hyvää palkkaa. Työtyytyväisyys ei tule pelkästään siitä, että se, mitä teen, on kiinnostavaa, tai se, että siitä, että minulle maksetaan siitä hyvin, vaan siitä, että siitä on hyötyä myös muille kuin minulle itselleni. Samankaltaista asiasta on kyse tässä ansionkertymässä. Buddhalaiselta näkökannalta se, että teet jotakin, josta on hyötyä muille, tuo valtavasti hyötyä myös sinulle itsellesi. Buddhalta kerran kysyttiin, miksi hän oli niin kaunis. Hänen oppilaansa tuli häneltä kysymään, miksi olet niin kaunis, jalo, kunnioitettu. Buddha vastasi, se johtuu siitä, että olen tehnyt hyviä tekoja niin monen aikaisemman elämän aikana, pannut muut ihmiset etusijalle. Buddha kertoi, kuinka hän oli kerran syntynyt peurana, todella kauniina kultaisena peurana, jolla oli kultaiset sarvet. Tästä kultaisesta peurasta tuli lauman johtaja. Siinä maassa oli kuningas, joka rakasti metsästämistä, ja paitsi että hän itse kävi mielellään metsällä, hän värväsi myös koko armeijansa metsästämään hänen kanssaan ja kaikki kyläläiset auttamaan metsästyksessä. Kyläläiset kyllästyivät tähän, koska metsästys voi paljon heidän aikaansa ja sekoitti heidän elämänsä täysin, ja he päättivät tehdä asialle jotakin. He päättivät rakentaa metsään aitauksen, jonne ajettaisiin kaikki eläimet. Siellä kuningas voisi sitten metsästää mielin määrin, eikä tarvitsisi koko kylää apunaan, ja kyläläiset voisivat jatkaa elämänsä niin kuin tahtoivat. Näin tapahtui. Aita rakennettiin, ja sen sisään suljettiin paljon eläimiä. Siellä oli myös kaksi peuralaumaa, josta toisen johtaja oli tämä kultainen peura. Ja kun kuningas tuli metsästämään, paitsi että paljon eläimiä tapettiin, niin myös muut eläimet joutuivat kärsivään, kun ne juoksivat, säntäsivät kauhuissaan paikasta toiseen ja vahingoittivat toinen toisiaan paitessaan. Niinpä nämä kahden peuralauman johtajat pitivät kokouksen. Totesivat, että tilanne on paha, nyt paljon eläimiä loukkaantuu paitsi metsästäjien nuolista myös sen pakenemisen takia. Meidän on tehtävä tälle asialle jotakin. Niinpä he päättivät valita kummastakin laumasta yhden peuran kuninkaan tapettavaksi niin, että muut saisivat olla rauhassa ja säilyisivät vahingoittumattomina. Näin tehtiin. Eräänä päivänä yksi naaraspeura tuli tämän kultaisen peuran laiman johtajan juokse. Naaraspeura itki ja sanoi, tänään on minun vuoroni mennä metsästettäväksi, mutta en itke omasta puolestani, mutta olen raskaana ja se tuntuu epäreilulta, koska sovittiin, että kummastakin laumasta uhrataan vain yksi peura. Nyt kun minut tapetaan, niin siinä tapetaan myöskin minun vasani. Voisitko auttaa? Kultainen peura sanoi, olet oikeassa, näin sovittiin, että vain yksi peura uhrataan kummastakin laumasta, minä teen asialle jotakin. Ja hän vapautti tämän naaraspeuran tehtävästään. Hän meni sitten kuninkaan syötiksi itse, koska hän ei voinut pyytää ketään toista laumasta uhrattavaksi. Niinpä hän käyskenteli kuninkaan eteen ja kuningas oli hämmästynyt. Miksi sinä tulit tänne metsästettäväksi? Sinähän olet lauman johtaja. En minä voi sinua ampua. Mene pois, sinä olet vapaa. Minä en aio metsästää sinua.
Kultainen peura sanoi, ei käy. Jos vapautat minut tänään, niin huomenna ammut jonkun muun lauman jäsenen. Se ei ole hyvä. Ammu minut sen sijaan. Kuningas sanoi, no okei, minä vapautan sinun koko laumasi. Ja kerää laumasi, me avaamme portit, pääsette lähtemään. Teistä ei tapeta ketään. Kultainen peura sanoi, ei se riitä. Täällä on toinenkin peuralauma. Jos minun laumani vapautetaan, niin tuo toinen joutuu metsästettäväksi ja joku joutuu kärsimään joka päivä. Kuningas miettii, lopulta hän myöntyy. Hyvä on, minä vapautan molemmat laumat. En metsästä teistä kumpiakaan enää. Kultainen peura sanoi, ei tämäkään riitä. Tässä tämän aitauksen sisällä on niin paljon eläimiä. Jos vapautat meidät, nuo toiset joutuvat kuitenkin metsästettäväksi ja ne ovat viattomia, ne eivät ole tehneet mitään pahaa. Miksi niiden pitäisi kuolla? Kuningas marisi ensin, nyt sinä kyllä pyydät liikaa, sinä nyt ylität tässä rajana. Hän miettii kuitenkin asiaa ja sanoo lopulta, hyvä on, minä vapautan kaikki metsän eläimet. Kultainen peura sanoo, voinko me tehdä vielä yhden toivomuksen? Ole hyvä ja kuuntele minua. Jos et metsästäkään enää nisäkkäitä, sitten siirryt metsästämään lintuja. Linnut ovat täysin viattomia, ne eivät ole tehneet kenellekään mitään pahaa. Sinun pitäisi vapauttaa myös ne. Kuningas miettii, käyttää aika paljon aikaa tähän. Sitten hän lopulta sanoo, hyvä on, minä takaan sinulle tämän, mitä pyysit. En metsästä enää lintujakaan. Silloin kultainen peura sanoo, anna minun pyytää vielä yhtä asiaa, niin sitten olen onnellinen. Kalat ovat kaikkein viattomimpia, ne eivät ole koskaan vahingoittaneet ketään. Vapautan ne kalatkin ja sitten minä menen pois onnellisena. Kuningas miettii asiaa ja sanoo sitten lopulta, hyvä on, olet hyvin itsepäinen, mutta minä vapautan kaikki nisäkkäät, kaikki linnut ja kaikki kalat. Sitten vasta kultainen peura lähti pois onnellisena. Tämän tarinan Buddha kertoi osoittaakseen, että ihmiset, jotka tekevät aikaisempien lukemattomien elämiensä aikana tällaisia tekoja, heistä tulee kauniita.
So then we come to the second, the purification of the, you know, the negative deeds, or the purification of the faults, the purification. Now purification is something important in Buddhism. The understanding is that, you know, whatever negative things that we have done, there's nothing that cannot be purified. Now, this is the Buddhist understanding. That's why, you know, in Buddhism, when we translate, translating the Buddhist translators, refrained to use the word sin for negative deeds, because they thought sin kind of gave a more unkind of purifiable kind of context or meaning. So therefore they used not sin but negative deeds. So whatever negative deeds we have done or whatever negative things happen to us, it is not something that cannot be changed or purified or transformed. So therefore, you know, it has to be purified. And the purification process is By recognizing, you know, recognizing that your action of body, speech, and mind, which is negative, as negative, you know, this thing that I do, the way I do it, or with what intention I do it, it is not good. It is not beneficial for me. It's not beneficial for others. So therefore, if I did it, I don't want to do it again. I regret doing it. You know, that's the seeing, understanding the negativity of that is the first, most important thing. This is also very important to understand that from Buddhist point of view, what is a positive and negative is just, you know, an action that brings, you know, suffering and pain for ourselves and others. That's the negative deed. So therefore, if we find out what is really, then we don't want to do it anything, you know. We don't want to be hurt. We don't want to have problems. So therefore, those actions of body, speech and mind that brings pain and problem and suffering for others and myself, I try not to do it. And if I've done it before, then I recognize it and I try to, you know, two things. I try to not do it again. I try to, you know, reduce doing it if I am doing it still. And I, you know, whatever I have done, I try to kind of get rid of those habitual tendencies that I have in me, you know, or the emotions and different kind of elements that actually lead to doing those actions. I try to work on that and try to reduce those kind of things. So the purification is this, that I don't try to hold on to those motivations, emotions, you know, those ways of thinking or attitudes that makes me do those negative things. I don't try to hold on to that. I try to let go of them. And then, the you know, like, for instance, you know, when I harm somebody, why I harm somebody? Because I hate. You know? If I'm angry and hateful, then I try to harm others. So therefore, the hatred is the main cause. So I try to let go of the hatred. Because if I have the hatred, I will try to harm others. So therefore, you know, the purification is to letting go of that which actually brings these actions. So in the same way, anything that I can see that brings those kind of things, I try to let go. And also, you know, like, how do this hate come from? It's because I'm hurt and therefore I hate. You know? If something hurts me, and then that brings me angry and that brings hatred. So therefore, if I feel hurt, then I try to let go of that too. Because if I don't let go of that, then that brings me hatred and anger and things like that. And that brings more negative things, and that brings, you know, more actions of negativity. So therefore, you know, I try to work on myself through different means by understanding. Understanding becomes very important in Buddhism. You know, to see this action, this motivation, this intention, this emotion is something that is neither good for me nor good for other. But of course, because it is an habitual tendency, because it's been going on for so long, because it is, you know, a kind of addiction, so it happens again and again. So when I see this, you know, this emotion or this kind of habit or this, you know, desire of doing that is happening, then I catch it and I say, you know, this is no good, neither good for me nor good for others, so I try to let go. So this is purification. You know, the purification is trying to let go of the causes and the conditions that brings. And also then, you know, the actions that I've done, I try to let go of them, holding on to them. So this is the purification, and this is the understanding that there's nothing which cannot be purified, there's nothing which cannot be transformed and changed. So working on that is extremely important, an important practice in Buddhism. And also in order to then, you know, like we can do the Tonglen practice. You know, if I feel something negative, you know, like negative deed that I've done, so then I say, this negative deed I'm doing, or this negative feeling I have, on that, you know, say like I'm feeling angry, or something like that. So immediately I catch that, and then I say, I'm angry. On this anger, may all the anger of everybody come. You know, then I breathe in. All everybody's anger, you know. You become really angry now. You become blue. We have this, in Tibetan Buddhism is very strange. You know, you have this wrathful deities, you know. This red wrathful deities and black wrathful deities. You know, red is very wrathful, but black is even more wrathful, you know. So first you become red and then you become blue, you know, if you are very angry. Anyway, that's another one. So you don't become blue, actually. You try to, you know, and then you purify that, like we did before, you know, like this Tonglen practice. It eats your own anger, and then your kind of the compassion comes out, and then that, you know, shines to all the beings, also yourself, and all the anger, and that negative karma that's created by anger and hatred is cleaned from all the cells of your body, you know, completely out of your body, and then also to all the other beings and things like that, and you feel deeply like that. And when you do that, you know, because what you are is what you feel, so therefore when you try to feel it again and again, then your habitual tendency changes, your way of being changes, so therefore that's the transformation. You know, that's the purification also. So in this way, you know, whatever negative feelings you have, you know, like anger or greed or even like sadness or, you know, fear or whatever. Like if you fear, then you take the fear of everybody on that. And then that kind of eats up your own fear, and then your fearlessness, your compassion, your confidence, you know, that comes out in the light, your wisdom, and then that shines, and then feel that every being is freed from fear and any kind of, you know, problems like that. And so therefore, you know, this, you do this kind of practices as well, and in whatever way, you know, you work on that. Now this is the very important thing from Buddhist point of view is, you know, we have to work on myself. I am my practice. Like Buddhism is a method. The real practice is myself. I don't practice Buddhism. I practice on myself. And if I find something in Buddhist teachings that is useful, I take it and use it. I find it something useful from anywhere, you know, anybody's instructions, anybody's understandings, anybody's, you know, any culture, any, and then I can use that also, because what I have to do is work on myself. If I can transform, that's it, you know. If I can help others, that's it. It doesn't have to be only coming from Buddhism or only come from this lineage, things like that. So therefore, when you understand that, then I think it is very, very easy. You know, it's not, it doesn't have to be too rigid. It doesn't have to be too, and to be rigid is actually not good. That's not good. So therefore, this is very important to understand this, and you know, so to purify. That's the second one.
Sitten tulemme toiseen menetelmään, kielteisten tekojen puhdistamiseen. Ymmärrämme, että mitä tahansa kielteistä me olemmekin tehneet, ei ole olemassa mitään, mitä ei voida puhdistaa. Buddhalaiset kääntäjät yleensä eivät ole käyttäneet sanaa asia. Kun puhutaan kielteisyyksistä, he puhuvat vain kielteisyydestä.
Synti.
Mikä?
Synti.
Synti, aha, okei. Sana synti. vaan puhutaan vain kielteisyydestä, koska ajatus on se, että ei ole mitään sellaista, mitä ei voisi puhdistaa. Puhdistamisen prosessi alkaa siitä, että tunnistamme oman tekomme, että se ei ole hyvä, että se ei ole hyödyllinen minulle itselleni tai muille. Sen näkeminen että, ja ymmärtäminen, että on tehnyt jotain kielteistä ja katumus, se on lähtökohta. Kielteinen teko on teko, joka saa aikaan kipua ja kärsimystä sekä muille että minulle itselleni. Kun tunnistan sen, niin ymmärrän, että en halua enää aiheuttaa kipua, en halua aiheuttaa harmia, en halua aiheuttaa kärsimystä. Tunnistan sen ja sitten pyrin olemaan toistamatta tuota tekoa, tai jos se on mahdotonta, niin ainakin tekemään sitä vähemmän. Ja toiseksi pyrin pääsemään eroon niistä tavanomaisista käyttäytymistottumuksista, niistä tunteista, jotka johtavat kielteisiin tekoihin. Puhdistamiseen kuuluu siis se, että pyrin päästämään irti niistä ajattelutavoista ja asenteista, jotka aiheuttavat, jotka saavat aikaan sen, että teen kielteisiä asioita. Kun vahingoitan jotakuta, yleensä se johtuu siitä, että minussa on vihaa, olen vihainen. Silloin yritän päästä eroon tästä vihasta. Puhdistamisessa on kyse siitä, että päästetään irti niistä ajattelutavoista ja käyttäytymistottumuksista, jotka aiheuttavat näitä kielteisiä tekoja. Ja kun mietimme vihaa, meidän on tutkittava myös, mistä tuo viha aiheutuu. Yleensä se aiheutuu siitä, että minua on loukattu, että minua on satutettu. Niinpä pyrin päästämään irti paitsi vihasta, myös tuosta loukatuksi tulemisen tunteesta. Yritän näin työskennellä itseni kanssa erilaisin keinoin. Ymmärtämällä sen, että teko, sen motivaatio tai asenne, joka aiheuttaa sen, ei ole hyväksi minulle itselleni tai muille. Kyseessä on ikään kuin riippuvuus. Teen jotain asiaa, koska olen tottunut siihen. Yritän tunnistaa tämän, yritän päästää irti niistä syistä ja olosuhteista, jotka johtavat tähän tekoon. Kaiken pohjalla on ymmärrys siitä, että ei ole mitään sellaista, mitä ei voisi puhdistaa. Tonglen harjoitus on hyvä menetelmä puhdistaa kielteisiä tekoja. Kun teen jotain kielteistä, minulla on siihen liittyvä tunne. Saan kiinni tuosta tunteesta, olkoonpa se vaikka viha, ja ajattelen, että otan sisääni kaiken vihan, mitä maailmassa on, kaikkien olentojen vihan. Ja silloin minusta tulee niin vihainen, että muutun siniseksi. Niin ei tietenkään käy, vaan se viha, jonka otan sisääni tässä Tonglen harjoituksessa, syö pois minun oman vihani. Puhdistaa sen, se puhdistaa minusta, minun mielestäni ja kehostani kaiken oman vihani aiheuttaman kielteisen karman. Todellinen buddhaluontoni pääsee loistamaan ja se loistaa kaikkiin ilmansuuntiin. Ja kohdatessaan kaikki vihasta kärsivät olennot, se puhdistaa myös heidän vihastaan. Mitä tahansa kielteisiä tunteita sinulla onkin, surua, pelkoa, tuskaa. Voit ottaa sen harjoituksen lähteeksi, ottaa itseesi kaikkien olentojen, vaikkapa pelon. Ja se puhdistaa silloin sinun oma pelkosi ja se kaikki hyvä, joka sinusta säteilee, puhdistaa kaikki ne olennot, jotka tuntevat pelkoa. Meidän on siis työskenneltävä itsemme kanssa. Buddhalaisuus on menetelmä, jonka todellinen harjoitus olen minä itse. Ja jos löydän mistä tahansa muualta, mitä tahansa, mitä voin käyttää hyväkseni, voin ottaa sen ja harjoittaa sitä. Voin käyttää hyväkseni mitä tahansa, joka on hyödyllistä. Ei sen tarvitse olla buddhalaista tai ei sen tarvitse olla tämän saman perimyslinjan harjoitus. On tärkeää, että emme ole liian jäykkiä siinä, miten ajattelemme asioita.
And then the third thing says showing generosity towards harmful influences. This is also a very important, what we call as the using the, you know, transforming adversaries. That if we have a negative thing happening to us, instead of, you know, like trying to kind of resist this too much, you say, whatever come, come, you know. And when, like there are, there's a saying in Tibetan, it is better protection to say, please eat me and kill me once, than saying, please protect me and care for me 100 times. Meaning that, you know, if you kind of say, please protect me, please, you know, like that, too much, you know, that wishing too much, like protected and caring and things like that, is not too much protection. If you say, okay, if, you know, take me, just eat me up, something like that, if you can say that from your heart, that is more protection. So this understanding is here, that, you know, when something happens, something harmful influence happens, instead of like trying to run away or trying to kind of like destroy those harmful influences, you say, you know, you kind of, there's a practice called jyu in Buddhism, things like that, that you give your own kind of body to them in a way, in the meditation. And the more you kind of do away with you clinging to yourself, clinging to your own kind of things, the more, you know, more harmless it becomes, the more, you know, more protected you become, you know. It is a little bit like that, even in our general life, I think, you know. The more I kind of try to protect myself, you know, the more, you know, then what happens, like this, you know, the more I am unprotected, because everybody becomes like my enemy, you know. The more I embrace more, you know, I'm okay with everybody and whatever happens, the more, in a way, I'm protected, because it's, you know, there's no separation from me, there's no, like we talked about last time also, if I only see everybody like up and down and, you know, competing, then I make myself very separate from myself. Everything I see is like an enemy almost, at least like adversary. But if I embrace everybody, then I can't feel like that. So in the same way, you know, if you have like, you know, this is the understanding that the loving kindness, compassion is said to be the worst, most important, most kind of strongest protection. There's also a story, like there's a story that even like evil spirits cannot harm people who have, you know, who have great compassion. I don't know whether this is true or not, but there is a story, the Tibetan story, that there was once, you know, in very kind of remote corner of Tibet, there was a small family, a nomadic, and they were sitting in the evening around the fire and having supper. And then the father said, "Oh, okay," and he stood up and went away. "I'm being called," he said, and he went. And he disappeared. He never came back. So they searched him all over the places for many days and couldn't find him. So they thought he died. And then they did his last rites and all the things. And then Then after 1 year, he appeared. And he said that he was taken by an evil spirit. So he traveled all over, everywhere, and then, you know, he had lots of stories to tell. You know, maybe it's stories. One story he told was this evil spirit that he was taken by. He said that once he went to a big lama's camp, and then he went into this lama's camp, and then he saw, you know, there were many, many monks, very well dressed, and all those kind of things. He went and he pushed them here and there. They didn't understand. They couldn't see it. Nobody saw him. Then there was mules. He killed 10 mules. Nobody could do anything. Then he went in and he saw this lama, the highest lama. And he was an old man with bald head. So he said, "I will sit on his head." So he came and sat on his head. And then, you know, he looked down and the lama was laughing, and becoming smaller, smaller. And when the lama was laughing, he was crying. He wanted to, you know, he couldn't help but crying. And then lama became so small and so kind of completely attached to the seat like this. And then he came out and he came crying. And he said that from that day onwards, for one whole year, he couldn't harm anybody. And he said, all this time, what lama was doing nothing else but meditating compassion. You know, so if meditating compassion, it affects so much the, you know, even the evil spirit that they lose the ability to harm others. So this is the general understanding behind that. When you are, you know, when you have this kind of the compassionate, you know, when harmful things happen, when negative forces happen also, if you can, you know, generate compassion and, you know, not hate, but compassionately, lovingly, you know, relate, then no harm can happen to you. So this is, you know, one way of using, because using the adversaries, you know, this is in our life also, you know, like when there is kind of a conflict also, you know, when there's conflict, what usually happens is, you know, there's a kind of two parties, and then, you know, this does something or says something bad to these people, and then this do or say something more bad people to this, and then this becomes more angry and do something more, and then more, and then, you know, that's all the wars and all these things happen. You know, sometimes it never stops for hundreds of years, you know. So, it can never stop unless, you know, this whole thing is changed. You know, somebody has to stop. This side will say, "I will not stop unless I am the I winner." This will say, "I will not stop unless I am the winner." So then, when will that end? It cannot end any time, because, you know, when this is the winner, then this will not stop. When this is the winner, this will not stop, you know. So, one time, somebody has to say, "Okay, I am not the winner, but I will stop." So then only, the dialogue or the compromise or whatever, the, you know, situation can only if you stop doing this negative thing, then only you can stop, isn't it? Otherwise, you cannot stop. You have to stop hating. You have to stop doing negative things, and only then the whole process of harming each other can stop. So therefore, it's the same way. You know, anything is like that. So therefore, to the harmful influences, if you can show generosity, if you can show, compassion, if you can, but this needs lots of courage. This needs lots of courage. This needs lots of determination. This needs lots of, you know, both from inside and outside. People will be, it's not easy, you know, to do that. It needs lots of strength. But that's the only way to stop something happening bad. You know, this, So therefore, this is the important thing, is even to, usually we say, oh, he did something bad to me, why should I stop? You know? Then you will not stop, but then it will never stop. So what's the use? You know? If I can, if I have the wisdom and the courage to stop it, actually both becomes the winner. Not just I am the winner, but not just he is the winner, but both becomes winner, because this negative, you know, kind of ping-pong action stops. You know? So this is the understanding, and this has to be the, you know, in every different kind of a field. So when a harmful thing happens to you, or somebody does something negative thing, you know, usually your instinct is to harm him, to do something in reply negatively. Yeah. But if it is possible, if you have the enough kind of wisdom and the courage not to do that, but do it in a more positive way, then actually the whole thing can stop. That is how it is said. Usually there's only one thing that would not work like that. And that's your own negative emotions, you see. Like your anger, for instance, or your hatred. Your hatred, however much you please, it will never stop harming you. You know? Because its nature is hatred. It does negative things. Other than that, to anybody, you know, if you say, okay, you know, even if you harm me, I won't harm you back, then at one stage, the other person has to say, okay, then I would not harm you either, you know. Or there is no reason for him to harm me because I don't harm him. So therefore, this, you know, this is the idea.
Kolmas menetelmä. Osoita anteliaisuutta haitallisia vaikutuksia vastaan. Tämä menetelmä on erittäin hyvää vastoinkäymisten muuntamiseksi. Kun jotain kielteistä tapahtuu, älä yritä vastustella sitä, vaan ota se vastaan. Osoita sille anteliaisuutta. Tiibetiläiset sanovat, että saat paremman suojan, jos sanot, tapa minut, syö minut yhden kerran, kuin että sanot, suojele minua 100 kertaa. Tässä on se ajatus, että kun kohtaamme haitallisia vaikutuksia, meidän ei kannata juosta karkuun, vaan kohdata ne, ottaa ne vastaan. On olemassa harjoitus nimeltä Chöd, jossa oma keho annetaan ikään kuin uhrina. Mitä enemmän takertumista on, sitä enemmän siitä seuraa harmoja. Mitä enemmän kaipaan suojelua, sitä enemmän sitä tarvitsen, koska vähitellen kaikki ympärilläni tulee minun vihollisekseni. Mitä enemmän avaudun, mitä enemmän otan kaiken vastaan, otan kaikki syleilyyni, niin sitä enemmän olen turvassa, koska minulla ei ole enää vihollisia. Rakastava ystävällisyys ja myötätunto on paras mahdollinen suoja. Tähän liittyy tarina. Pahat hengetkään eivät voi vahingoittaa niitä, joilla on suuri myötätunto. Kaukaisessa Tiibetin kolkassa asui perhe. Eräänä iltana he olivat istumassa tulen äärellä syömässä illallistaan, kun perheen isä nousi ylös ja sanoi, minua kutsutaan, ja meni ulos. hän katosi jälkiä jättämättä. Häntä etsittiin useita päiviä ja kun häntä ei löydetty, pääteltiin, että mies on varmaan kuollut ja hänelle pidettiin hautausrituaalit. Vuoden kuluttua hän ilmaantui jälleen ja hänellä oli paljon tarinoita kerrottavanaan. Pahat hengit olivat siepanneet hänet ja kierrättäneet häntä pitkin maailmaa. Paha henki, joka vei häntä mukanaan, oli mennyt suuren laman leiriin. Siellä oli paljon munkkeja, hyvin pukeutuneita, vauraita. Paha henki heitteli heitä pitkin seiniä. Hän myös tappoi 10 muulia ja tuli sitten laman luokse. Lama oli hauras vanha mies, jolla oli kaljupää, ja paha henki istui tämän laman pään päälle. Lama alkoi nauraa, ja mitä enemmän hän nauroi, sitä enemmän hän kutistui. Paha henki näki tämän ja alkoi itkeä. Lama nauroi nauramistaan ja kutistui kutistumistaan, kunnes tuli niin pieneksi, että häntä ei enää voinut erottaa tyynystä, jolla hän istui. Ja pahan henkeen tämä vaikutti niin, että kokonaiseen vuoteen hän ei pystynyt tekemään mitään pahaa kenellekään. Ja tuon laman ainut ase oli se, että hän meditoi myötätuntoa. Jos pystyt kehittämään myötätuntoa, sinulle ei voi tapahtua mitään pahaa. Elämässä yleensä käy niin, että kun on jokin konflikti, se mitä siinä tapahtuu on se, että osapuolet pitävät tiukasti kiinni omasta kannastaan, eivätkä halua antaa periksi. Kumpikin osapuoli sanoo, että minä en lopeta ennen kuin tuo toinen lopettaa. Tai minä en lopeta ennen kuin olen voittanut tämän konfliktin. Ja kun vastapuoli sanoo samaa, se ei voi jatkua loputtomiin. Sodatkin syntyvät tällä tavalla. Sen sijaan, jos toinen osapuoli sanoo, hyvä on, en ole voittaja, mutta lopetan silti. Vasta silloin dialogi voi alkaa ja tilanne voidaan ratkaista. Kielteisiltä vaikutuksilta tai kielteiset vaikutukset voi siis kohdata osoittamalla niitä kohtaan anteliaisuutta ja myötätuntoa. Se vaatii kyllä paljon rohkeutta ja päättäväisyyttä, paljon voimaa, mutta se on ainut tapa lopettaa konflikti. Jos minulla on viisautta ja rohkeutta, kummastakin osapuolesta tulee voittaja, koska se kielteinen ping-pong-peli loppuu siihen paikkaan, kun toinen osapuoli lopettaa. Kun joku vahingoittaa sinua, yleensä vaistomaisesti haluat satuttaa häntä takaisin puolustautuaksesi, mutta jos sinulla on rohkeutta olla lyömättä takaisin, olet itse asiassa voittaja. Ainut asia, joka sinua voi vahingoittaa, on sinun oma vihasi.
Then making offerings to the protectors, Dakas and Dakinis. Making offerings to the protectors. Now this is, protectors can mean from enlightened protectors like Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to worldly protectors, the spirits who has been the protectors of the land or made to be protectors of the Dharma and things like that. So you make offerings to them and you try to kind of say that, you invoke their help to turn the negative things or the adversaries into something positive. This is the understanding from Buddhist point of view that, even like when you try to practice in a new place, in the countryside or something like that, the usual, usual way is to ask the local spirit the permission to do that or give a kind of, and things like that. There's all these kind of rituals, you can say that to make gifts and friends, make friends with everything and everybody, to treat the all the kind of beings and non-beings with respect, Especially, you know, the powerful beings like protectors, or you know, the wisdom beings like the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you know, to invoke their help and blessings, so that everything goes well and transformed. This is important because from Buddhist point of view, it is not that, you know, that from Buddhist point of view, it is like this. Sometimes, you know, because Buddhism doesn't believe or doesn't talk about a creator, you know, one kind of creator that creates everything, creator God. Sometimes people think Buddhism don't believe in anything, what can you say, any other force or any, you know, kind of, what can you say, supernatural, you can call it, or any other beings. But that's not the case. You know, they can be spirits, they can be Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, protectors, and things like that. And also the kind of more super you can call it, things like that. So therefore, you know, to kind of invoke them, and when you can invoke them and get the blessings, and then your practice can become your sometimes the things can become much easier and better. So therefore, to doing that is also a way of, you know, transforming the adversaries.
Neljäs metodi on uhrilahjojen antaminen suojelijoille, rekoille ja rakineille. Suojelijat voivat olla valaistuneita olentoja, samoin kuin maallisia suojelijoita, luonnonhenkiä ja sellaisia. Heille annetaan uhrilahjoja ja kutsutaan heidän apuaan, pyydetään heidän siunauksiaan, jotta voimme puhdistaa kielteisyyksiä. Perinteisesti buddhalaisuudessa on ollut tapana, että jos on perustettu uusi meditaatiopaikka vaikkapa jonnekin maaseudulle, missä on tarkoitus tehdä harjoitusta, niin yleensä aina ensin pyydetään paikallisilta luonnonhengiltä lupaa harjoittaa siellä, pyydetään heidän siunaustaan. Pyydetään voimakkaiden valaistuneiden olentojen siunausta ja suojelijoiden luonnonhenkien siunausta. Sanotaan, että buddhalaiset eivät usko luojaan. Joskus uskotaan myös, että buddhalaisuudessa ei uskota mihinkään niin kutsuttuun yliluonnolliseen voimaan, mutta se ei ole totta, koska näitä suojelijoita ja luonnonhenkiä on olemassa. Ja silloin voimme pyytää heidän apuaan ja heidän siunauksiaan, jotta oma harjoituksemme sujuu paremmin, niin siitä tosiaan voi olla hyötyä.
And then, lastly, to bring the unexpected obstacles to the path prepared by training now. So what it means to say is, you know, we have to do it now. You know, whatever problems or obstacles or whatever adversaries come, immediately use the Tonglen at that very moment and, you know, transform it. The practice is something that, you know, we have to do it. Otherwise, you know, knowing about the practice doesn't work. This is the main Buddhist understanding. Unless we use it, you know, the Dharma is not working, not useful. The more we use it, the more, you know, useful it becomes. So therefore, you know, to know about the methods is not enough. You know, we need to put it into action. We need to use it. We need to do it. And if we do it, then sometimes even very simple methods works. You know. Even if you have a very simple method, not very complicated, not very profound, not very, you know, but if a simple method, maybe like Tonglen practice, you know, it works. But if you don't use it, then even if we have a very big method, very difficult, you know, it's a little bit like this, you know, the cat and the fox, you know the story. You know the story? And the fox comes, and the cat is kind of, you know, lying in the sun on the fence. And then the fox comes, and fox says, you know, "You lazy cat, what are you doing here?" "Oh, I'm just, you know, sunbathing. And then he says, you know, "How many ways you know on how to, you know, how to run away from hunting dogs?" Cat says, "Only one." "Why?" "Oh, I know 100 ways." And then around that time, then they hear the sound of, you know, hounds coming, you know, the dogs coming. And then the cat jumps on the branch of a tree and sits there and says, "This is my way, my own method. Now let us see how would you do with your 100 methods." And then the, you know, fox runs here and there and shows all the 100 ways, but at the end the dogs get it. So sometimes, you know, just one method, a good one, is better than many methods.
Saattaaksesi odottamattomat esteet osaksi polkua valmentaudu harjoittelemalla nyt. Kyse on siitä, että välittömästi kun kohtaamme vaikeuksia, muunnamme ne harjoitukseksi esimerkiksi tekemällä tonglenia. Se, että tietää menetelmistä, ei vielä riitä, meidän on otettava ne käytäntöön. Hyvin yksinkertainen metodi voi toimia ja antaa meille suurta hyötyä, kuten tonglen. Vaikka sinulla olisi kuinka taidokas metodi käytössäsi, jos et käytä sitä, ei siitä ole mitään hyötyä. Tarina ketusta ja kissasta. Kettu saapuu paikalle ja löytää kissan makaamassa aidalla. Kettu sanoo kissalle: "Senkin laiska kissa, mitä sinä teet?" Kissa vastaa: "Minä tässä vain otan aurinkoa." Kettu kysyy: "Kuinka monta tapaa tiedät paeta metsästyskoiria?" Kissa sanoo: "Minä tiedän vain yhden tavan." Kettu kehuskelee: "Minä tiedän ainakin 100 eri tapaa." Ja silloin kuuluu jo metsästyskoirien ääni. Kissa pakenee hyppäämällä punnoksalle ja sanoo: "Tämä on minun tapani." Kettu alkaa juosta sinne ja tänne ja näyttää kaikki 100 erilaista tapaansa paeta, ja loppujen lopuksi jää kuitenkin ne koirien hampaisiin.
That's all?
Yes.
That's all. So we finished the third chapter. Any questions?
Onko kysymyksiä?
I have a very simple question.
Okay.
You are talking about the conflict between two people, and that one should show compassion and kind of try to stop the situation, and it takes a lot of courage. But I think, doesn't it lead to a situation where people use you, since you are too kind? I think, like a... Well, since you have happened to mention work life and job satisfaction, for example, work life is very harsh. So people start to use and abuse you if you are too kind. So it's a very harsh world.
Actually, it's not true. It's completely not true. If you are kind, and if you are, you know, if you are compassionate, people will respect you more. Most people will respect you more. But of course, even if you are not kind and compassionate, people can use you. You know, people will try to use you. It's not that if you are kind and compassionate, people will use you more. If you are not kind and not compassionate, people will use you less. That's not right. It's not like that. People will try to use you whatever way. You know, you know, people will try to get advantage of you, whatever. You know, so it's up to you how much you allow them to take advantage of you or not. You know, so you can a little bit you can take let them take advantage of, and let little bit you can take advantage of them also. You know. You can take little bit, if you allow little bit, take advantage of you. You can also take little bit advantage of them. It is, you know, win-win situation, you know. That's what we call cooperation, you know. If I give a little and then they give a little and then, you know. But it is not that, you know, if you are compassionate, you don't have to be, if you are kind, you don't have to be like, you know. Being kind and compassionate and being stupid is two different things. You know, sometimes people misunderstand this. I have to be compassionate. Means like, you know, I have to be stupid. It's not like that, you know. you have to be not stupid. You know, that's very important not to be stupid, you know. So you have to know what's going on, you know. You have to know what's going on and... that's totally different. You know, if you are too innocent, if you are too naive, you know, then of course it's not good because then people can take very very badly advantage of you. You don't need to be that naive. You know, you should not be that naive. You should be intelligent, and you should know what is going on. And within that, if you are compassionate, then there's no problem, you know. Then there's no problem. I think it's like that.
Kysymys koski sitä, että kun oli puhetta konfliktista kahden ihmisen välillä, että se vaatii paljon rohkeutta, niin eikö se johda tilanteeseen, jossa sinua aletaan käyttää hyväksi? Rinpoche vastaa, että ei se pidä paikkaansa. Päinvastoin, jos olet ystävällinen ja myötätuntoinen, suurin osa ihmisistä kunnioittaa sinua enemmän. Ja sitä paitsi sinua voidaan käyttää hyväksi, vaikka et olisikaan ystävällinen ja myötätuntoinen. Ihmiset yrittävät käyttää sinua hyväkseen niin kuin ihan tilanteesta riippumatta. Silloin on kyse sinusta itsestäsi, minkä verran sinä sallit sitä, että sinua käytetään hyväksi. Ehkä voit sallia hiukan, ehkä voit itsekin hiukan yrittää hyötyä muista. Sitä kutsutaan niin kuin win-win-tilanteeksi. Eli se itse asiassa on yhteistyötä. Ja se on ihan on kaksi eri asiaa, olla myötätuntoinen ja ystävällinen ja olla typerää. Ei kukaan vaadi sinua olemaan typerää. Jotkut ihmiset saattaa kuvitella, että myötätuntoinen, se, että on myötätuntoinen, tarkoittaa sitä, että olisi jotenkin passiivinen ja hyväksikäytettävä, mutta ei se sitä tarkoita. Jos on hyvin viaton ja hyvin naivi, niin silloin sinua varmaan käytetäänkin hyväksi, mutta ei myötätuntoisuus edellytä sitä, että sinä olet viaton ja naivi. Se vain...
I have a really stupid question, but I would like to ask you.
Okay. The more stupid, the better.
That I understand that I choose my way, what I live for myself, and I understand that love is the greatest and beautiful what we have in this world. But I not understand how I can forgive for my parents for these things, and it's very difficult things. And I was out from my body for almost 50 years, and now I just didn't. in my body. But I'm sorry, I want to forgive. But I'm not sure that, how I can do it. Because it's very difficult things.
Forgive your parents?
Yeah.
Forgive is very important, I think. You know, forgive is very important because what is forgiveness? Forgiveness is that, you know, what do you mean by forgiveness first?
Forgiveness. That I'm not angry and I love these people and like myself. I understand it.
Now, forgiveness is like this. Like somebody has done something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, because somebody has done something not so good, you know, you don't have to forgive unless there is something wrong, no? If somebody didn't do something wrong, then there's nothing to forgive, no? Forgive has to happen because of something wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody has done something wrong,
yeah,
and then you say, oh, that's very bad, that's really bad, that's too bad. Mm-hmm. You hold on to that. It's a very bad thing. Very hurt feeling, you know?
Yeah.
Hurt feeling. As long as you don't forgive, you keep on that hurt feeling. Yeah? What is, why do you want to keep this hurt feeling? Mm-hmm. It's not good for you, no?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes to be hurt. So why do you want to give this hurt feeling? So I must forgive means that I must say, you know, I don't want to keep this hurt feeling, you know. Let it be. If they did something wrong, so what? You know?
Yeah.
If you can say that, then you forgive. You know? If they did something wrong, they did something wrong. I don't want to keep it anymore. I forgive. It's finished with me. You know? If I can, you know, understand that they did this thing that you see or you thought was very, very negative or bad thing for you. If you look deeply, it is also possible you see why they did it. You know,
yeah,
maybe they did it to help you. Sometimes they do. You know, sometimes people try to do something help in from their point of view. You know, from their point of view, to help you, but it doesn't happen to help you. So if that is the case, then it's more reason to forgive, you know? Because people, when people try to help you, you don't hate them, no? Even if it doesn't turn out so helpful. You know? So therefore, there's more reason to forgive. So therefore, it's, you know, not forgiving is holding on to a kind of a hurt feeling, to a hateful feeling, to a malicious feeling, unpleasant feeling. So therefore, it is not useful and not good at all. So therefore, you must forgive. You know? So you forgive. And maybe they did something wrong with bad intention, maybe they did not do it with bad intention, whatever may be. You know, it's no use for you to keep it, so forgive them. And anybody can make mistakes, you know, because nobody is perfect. Nobody is perfect, so there's nothing kind of a, if somebody does something that is not so good for you, there's no use, or there's no need to hold on to it too much, because, you know, anybody can make mistakes. You can yourself make mistakes. You can yourself do things which might harm people.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't want to be unforgiving for that. No? So you have to forgive. So this is the understanding. I think you have to forgive. It's good to forgive. It's better to forgive. For you and for others both.
I said many times and that I forgive for all things from all my heart. But I'm not sure. Is it sometimes it come again, and I will think again about the thing.
Yeah, you do it again and again, and you forgive again and again, and then you know don't hold it any longer as much as possible. Mm-hmm.
Kyse oli anteeksi antamisesta. Jos joku, vaikkapa omat vanhemmat, on tehnyt jotain hyvin pahaa, jota on vaikea antaa anteeksi, miten silloin pitäisi toimia? Mitä anteeksi antaminen tarkoittaa? Jos joku on tehnyt sinulle kohtaan jotain väärää, niin jos pidät kiinni tuosta loukatuksi tulemisen tunteesta, niin takerrut siihen, niin et voi antaa anteeksi. Ja niin kauan kuin et anna anteeksi, niin sinä yhä takerrut tuohon satutetuksi tulemisen tunteeseen. Sen takia anteeksi antaminen on tärkeää, koska se on irti päästämistä siitä loukatuksi tulemisen tunteesta. Jos en halua pitää kiinni tuosta tunteesta, niin voin vain luopua siitä ja todeta, että no, minulle tehtiin pahaa, entä sitten se on ollut ja mennyttä. Ja jos katsot hyvin syvällisesti tuota tekoa ja niitä ihmisiä, jotka sen tekivät, on myös mahdollista, että näet, miksi he tekivät sen asian tai ne asiat, jotka satuttivat sinua. Ehkä he jopa tekivät sen auttaakseen sinua. Vaikka tulos ei ollutkaan toivottu, heidän motivaationsa oli silti hyvää. Jos tästä on kyse, niin on entistä enemmän syytä antaa anteeksi. Se, että ei anna anteeksi, on kiinni pitämistä loukatuksi tulemisen tunteista, ja se ei ole hyödyllistä. Silloin on vain päästettävä irti. Sinua kohtaan on myöskin tehty ihan tarkoituksellisesti väärin. Se on ihan saman tekevää. On parempi vain päästää irti tuosta loukatuksi tulemisen tunteesta ja antaa anteeksi. Kysymys sitten jatkuu, että joskus vaikka tunteekin antaneensa anteeksi monta kertaa, niin tulee niin kuin ne asiat tulevat mieleen yhä uudelleen. Ja silloin ainut lääke siihen on päästää yhä uudelleen irti, antaa yhä uudelleen anteeksi.
Sunamdi tamje zibani toni nibe tanam basi Sega nanje valam tribai sibe sole tova tova
sho. Okay. Thank you very much. Good night.